I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and we have the minutes in our packet. Representative Mariani, have you read the minutes?
Omnibus.
Okay. You didn't answer my question, but you're moving the minutes. Okay. any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carried. We have several bills up today and would like to move pretty rapidly because we do have floor session at noon, and hopefully we can get through all of these in a timely manner. So the first two bills actually are Representative Newton. Is he here? Yep, there we go. I'll move that House File 2556 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And we have one author's amendment. Do you want to do that before you present the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The author's amendment simply provides the funding for the bill. We didn't have the amount in there previously as it went through the various committees.
And for the information of the committee, and we've talked about this before, that this bill comes in under the budget resolution as in the category other bills. So that's where the dollars are coming from. So the chair moves the amendment A3. Any discussion? Representative Newton just explained it. Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Newton on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2556 simply raises the moratorium, the existing Department of Human Services moratorium on adult daycare and group homes for veterans. Right now, there's a moratorium on the number of homes that can be established, and so this would raise it for veterans.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then the chair renews his motion, or my motion, that House File 2556, as amended, be recommended
to pass.
We got the word recommended in there again. No. Or to be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Davids.
Here to help, Mr. Chair.
He and I both know what that's about. I don't know if anybody else does on these motions. Okay, so we have that motion before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Newton, your second bill is House File 2757. It deals with veterans again. So I'll move that House File 2757, first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2757 deals with veterans who are in domiciliary care. We have only two facilities for domiciliary care. And according to the VA, domiciliary is basically room and board care. That's the 180-unit facility in Hastings and the 50-unit facility in Minneapolis. Since 1997, they've been limited to being able to retain $90 of whatever income they have, and this simply raises the amount to $114.
Okay, and any discussion on the bill? Okay, well, seeing none, then I will renew my motion that House File 2757, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member.
The next bill that we have up is the claims bill, Representative Murphy. And Representative Murphy, I move that House File 3241 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And you have one author's amendment. Do you want to take that before or after you explain the bill? Probably want to take it before.
Before, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So I will move the A114-1072 amendment If you want to explain the amendment, then Representative Murphy.
Well, it has up-to-date costs or payments in it as of yesterday afternoon.
Thank you. Okay. So, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Murphy on the.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the amending 3241. And the claims subcommittee is under the LCC. Michelle Timmons, our legislative revisor, is our general counsel. There are three members from the Senate and three members from the House on this joint subcommittee. It meets at least once a year, usually more. We consider claims that have been against the state. Usually it's Department of Corrections or this time there's the Department of Transportation claim in here, and but most often it's workers or people that are incarcerated and then their workers' injuries. When we choose to pay a claim, the personal injuries are paid on the rates that MA is paid, pays personal injury things. And if it's a workers' comp type of injury, personal injury, we go by the workers' comp standards of payments. And so nobody's ripping off the system. But this meeting that occurred earlier this week, you'd think there was a sale on fingers. There was part of a finger, another part of a finger, another part of a finger. My gosh, we've got to get some safety training in on sentence to serve crews. That's my opinion only. But usually the subcommittee members talk about the things, the claims, enough so that we either deny them, which we did to all the TVs, all the broken TVs, all the stolen tennis shoes. We just were firm, tough love kind of thing. We said no. But in the bill, Article 1, we didn't say no to these personal injuries where they really made their case. And so the total is $83,332.34. Article 2 is a different matter. Article 2 was a claim by a worker in John Ward's district. The Department of Transportation contracted with a company, MC Carlson Company, to repair the Staples train depot. And they put on a nice roof, I guess, and they fixed it up the way the contract said, but they did not pay prevailing wage to these 10 workers, or seven, eight total workers, eight workers. And John Ward's constituent made a claim. The department still had a fund of $10,000 fund that was left over from the Carlson Company. And the Carlson Company left then, MG Carlson Company Incorporated. They left and couldn't be found. But DOT was right on it. We know now they're in Texas, and they're still operating in Texas. But we can't reach out to them. And these workers have no place to go except to the claims committee. And Mr. Zients, John Ward representing Mr. Zients, made a case. And we decided that we should divide the money up, but that $10,000, and Mr. Zients shall receive $4,000. some money, $4,000 for his part of the prevailing wage that he did not receive. And the others would have worked for smaller amounts of time. They should have a prorated part of it if DOT can find them. And that's my summary, Mr. Chair.
The summary was longer than the bill.
Any questions of the author, Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, I think that was the best summary of a claims bill I've heard in 22 years.
Thank you.
That's because it was so much shorter than most of them?
It's longer than the bill, though.
Yeah. Any discussion?
That's the
point. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I almost hate to say it, but I have a question about the MnDOT provision of the claims bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, or I think I do see today MnDOT in the audience. I'm trying to understand if there was still retainage on the project, was not the bonding company still have some responsibility? How was there an outstanding retainage and not a responsibility of the bonding company to make this payment?
Ms. Timmons.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative McNamara, there really are two different bonds on construction projects. One is a payment bond and the other is a performance bond. And so, yes, there was $10,900 and some dollars of contract retainage, but the workers did not make a claim against the payment bond within the 120-day period after the end of the project or the end of the work that they delivered. That's required by statute. And the performance bond really goes to the performance of the project, and the roof did go on. The project was done, but it wasn't done according to the contract provisions that required the prevailing wage.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand right, are you trying to say that MnDOT did not have the authority to require the bonding company to make this payment even though their bond was still active? I understand the bonds have two parts to them, but are you saying that they actually were released from the one bond and not the other with the outstanding retainage? I can't understand why. I'm trying to understand why didn't MnDOT just make this payment if they had more money still in the account? They have the ability to I'm trying to understand why this gentleman could not go to the bonding company if they had outstanding retainage still there. If the bond was still outstanding, how did they not have the ability to go there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, let me try to answer it, and then Mr. Jim Coney from the Department of Transportation is in the audience as well. Because the underpayment wasn't discovered until an audit was done about a year and a half after the project was completed, the workers didn't realize they were underpaid. So there wasn't a timely claim made against the payment bond. MnDOT tried in very good faith to get the performance bond. What they tried to do was give the contract retainage to the performance bond company and ask the performance bond company to pay all these workers pro rata based on how much they were underpaid. The performance bond company would not enter into that agreement. So essentially what this language does is it authorizes the Department of Transportation to make the payments directly to the individuals as they had requested the performance bond company to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still don't understand why we're in front of the claims and the legislature. MnDOT had the money. Just to clarify one thing, it was one bonding company with the two different parts to the bond. It was not two different bonding companies.
Perhaps Mr. Coney could come to the podium here.
You could identify yourself and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim County, and I'm with MnDOT. I'm the Assistant Chief Counsel for Construction and Contracts. To Representative McNamara's question, yes, there is one bonding company with two bonds, two parts to the bond. The performance bond runs to the benefit of the owner to secure getting the project done, whereas the payment bond runs to the benefit of workers and subcontractors and such. So MnDOT did ultimately default the contractor, and we made an effort to get the surety to cover these employee wages under the performance bond. The surety denied coverage under the performance bond, saying that the performance bond doesn't cover workers' wages and things like that. And unfortunately, the law is probably on their side on that point.
So, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So why didn't the department just issue these checks to those individuals? You didn't feel comfortable enough? I mean, what's the bonding company going to do? They weren't going to get the $11,000. The $11,000 you were holding from the contractor who had split. So why wouldn't you have just paid that to these individuals? They had a legitimate claim. Did you not have any legal authority to be able to? You clearly had the outstanding contract. The bonding company, I would argue, was defaulting in their obligations to pay under one of the two bonds. You still had the money. Why didn't you just issue the money to these individuals, at least to the one individual that was identified?
Mr. County.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we did some extensive research, and we concluded that we didn't have any statutory authority to directly pay these employees. We looked at some other potential processes, for example, through the Department of Labor and Industry, or maybe through the unclaimed property process of the Department of Commerce, and we concluded that we simply didn't have the statutory authority to pay these folks directly.
So,
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but going this route is completely new for the department. You clearly, this individual had the money coming. There was an outstanding bond, and you had adequate money in the account to pay it. I'm trying to understand why the department would not have done that. I understand. I mean, I don't see the surety going after you for they had no obligation. They had no financial. This now is a whole new territory we're going into, and I don't think we needed to. That's my point. I think the department would have made a better decision. This guy clearly had the money coming. The contract was still outstanding. You had a retainage on the account, on the contract. The contract was not closed out, right? You had a bonding company on the hook yet. You had an individual that had the money coming. It seems like the easy decision would have been just to pay them. And this insurance company, what are they going to do? Go after you for paying money that they really owed, and it's less than what they had coming anyway. I'm trying to understand why the department didn't pay this. I'm trying to follow the loops of this.
Mr. County.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the department certainly empathizes with the plight of these workers that were underpaid on this position, but after an analysis of our legal options, we simply concluded that we simply didn't have the statutory authority to pay these folks directly.
All right, I'll let up. That's fine.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 3241, as amended, be recommended to be placed in the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Loeffler is up next. Is Representative Lane here? Okay, we'll go to Representative Lane. We don't have Representative Loeffler present right now.
Thank you.
Representative Lane, your bill is dealing with electronic rosters and elections. So the chair will move that House File 2166, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. If you would like to present the bill.
Thank you. I'll give you a little background. Last year, the Omnibus Elections Bill created a task force to study electronic rosters. We wanted to examine the potential use of electronic poll books instead of our paper polling place rosters. The election bill also authorized a very small pilot project which examined five different types of electronic rosters in five different cities during the 2013 municipal elections. These cities could process same-day registrations with the electronic rosters, or they could check the registration status of registered voters, or both. But an important side point in this is that we did not at the time have the software necessary to load the electronic poll books with voter data directly from the Secretary of State, nor upload the data after the elections to the county and then the Secretary of State. It was done in an ad hoc fashion. So this was a very basic first step in piloting this. The recommendation of this 15-member task force was to authorize a formal study of the use of electronic rosters in a high turnout election of November 2014 and in more areas across the state. We wanted to test the ability to securely download pre-registered voter data and then process that data up after the election. We wanted a formal evaluation of the study so we could focus in on what technology worked best and a cost comparison to the paper process. However, because the state government finance was given a zero target, we pulled back to just the part of the bill that sets up the statutory requirements for the use of electronic rosters in Minnesota and gives any local jurisdiction the permission to go ahead on their own. And we asked the Secretary of State to do a simple report of whatever is reported back by the local jurisdictions who voluntarily try it. So there's a new physical note I think you just received that says that would cost the Secretary of State $1,000 that they would just pick up to absorb the cost of this report. But the new costs would fall to the local jurisdictions and are estimated to be about a minimum of about $2,000 per precinct to purchase perhaps a couple of tablet poll books, a small printer, some software. If the county purchased the software for many precincts and covered the annual licensing fees, there would probably be a volume discount, and this might be $50 to $100 per precinct. We're just not far enough along in this to know what the actual cost locally would be. That's why we wanted to have this formal study with costs covered, because we anticipate there will be a savings at the county level in the processing of results after an election. It can be a month or more long to process manually all the records after an election. Electronic poll books have the potential to majorly reduce this time and hence the cost involved. We need to find out what the savings are in order to know what the transfer to electronic rosters will really cost. But without an appropriation, we will now depend on certain jurisdictions to test this out on their own, and this bill gives them the permission to do that. And I do have David Maeda from Minnetonka and Christine Tweeter from Ramsey, Tweeten from Ramsey County to David has taken a lead in doing this for several years in Minnetonka, and they can answer any specific questions you have about local jurisdictions.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it would be probably helpful to have the Secretary of State's office to come down, because I'm guessing Ms. Lane, or Representative Lane, may not have the answer to this. I'm wondering if, is Minnesota one of the states that participates in the cross-check of voter rolls? Are we one of the states? There's 30 states that participate in that. Are we one of the states that check their voter registration with other states to check for people that maybe are voting in multiple states? Are we one of those states or no?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, we are currently not.
And Mr. Chair, can you tell me if the electronic roster then will give us, is that something that you're hoping to do down the road or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the electronic roster is completely, it has nothing to do with other states. It is just, instead of having a paper roster in the polling place that a voter comes in and signs, you would have the voter list electronically, and it would be in the polling place, it would be recorded that you voted, so that data can be uploaded after the election as opposed to being manually entered after the election. There was another bill that Representative Lane is also carrying that would allow us to compare voter registration data with other states that was passed and is now in the Rules Committee, I believe.
And, Mr. Chair, the reason why I ask this question is it's just come out today that there were 35,000 people that voted in the 2012 election that had the same name, same birth date, and they were voting in multiple states. So when people say that voter fraud doesn't exist, I think that they are, I've got a piece of swampland they could buy. And I get concerned about the integrity of our voting process, especially since we're not one of those states that participates in that cross-check. There are 30 states that participate in that, and I hope that we do that, because obviously if 35,000 people in the 2012 election were voting in multiple states, same name, same birth date, you got to suspect that something's wrong, and we need to have greater integrity overall. And so that's all I wanted to comment on, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to that. I mean, what we found is that there are millions of people in the United States that have the same name and thousands of people that have the same name and the same birth date. And so actually doing cross-checks with just using full name and date of birth is practically useless, because if there's a Robert Johnson with a certain date of birth in Minnesota, there's probably also a Robert Johnson with that same date of birth in Florida and Texas and California. And so seeing that somebody with the exact same name and the exact same date of birth voted in more than one state tells you nothing without additional information, which is why participating in the electronic registration information center that Representative Lane is proposing is very helpful, because it adds additional factors that we can look at to identify the same people, whereas the match that you're talking about, all they use is name and date of birth, and the information is practically useless.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would strongly disagree with your assessment, because you can't tell me that 35,000 people with the same name and birth date is just a coincidence. If you believe that, I think that you really need to look over your records, because that is not even physically. You can't tell anybody that they are going to have the same name and same birth date. I can buy if it was just the name. Sure, I can buy that. I have a last name of Anderson. I experienced that. But the same birth date, that's a problem. And I think that we need to address it in order to have integrity in our elections.
Mr. Chair. Representative Lane.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the other bill that I am carrying does that and more. It identifies who has died, who has moved, and who is the duplicate voter. So we have to move that other one.
Representative
Dabney. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this just reminds me of one of the more interesting challenges that I read in the newspaper a few years ago. Hennepin County Medical Center has an immigrants' health clinic because of the large influx of immigrants that Minnesota has seen. And one of their challenges, Representative Anderson, with medical records is that many, many Somali men are named Muhammad. But on top of that, when they came out of the refugee camps and came here, the folks who were processing them, because birth date doesn't have the same meaning in Somali culture that it does in Western culture, many of them didn't know their birth date, so they assigned them all January 1st. So you go to do medical records and you want to bring up Jim Dabney's, and you can do that pretty easily, but you want to bring up Muhammad, and he gives you the birth date, and there's hundreds of guys all named Muhammad, all with the same birth date. That, Mr. Chair.
And if you need any proof of that, I've got a couple of delegate lists with me, and I'll show them to you. You can look at, we have the new council member, Abdi Warsami. There's an Abdi Warsami in his same precinct. And there are, again, I have the lists of Mohammeds, the list of Abdi Mohammed and Mohammed Abdi and so forth. So, I think your district may be a little different, but we're experiencing. We have this experience in our area. And these are all citizens totally entitled to vote.
I think the discussion that's interesting is that as it gets us off this particular bill, and Representative Lane suggests another bill in the pipeline that tries to address some of the questions that I raised. So maybe if we can keep the discussion on this bill, being that we've got to be in session at noon. Any further questions or discussions on the bill? If not, then I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2166, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? No. Motion carried. We now have Representative Clark. I see Representative Loeffler is here. I didn't see that you'd come in. We had you up a few minutes ago, but we'll get you on the end.
I know, me too.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the delete everything amendment, the DE4.
Well, we have to move the bill first.
So I first move House File 2112.
Yeah, the first engrossment be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And that motion is now before us, and you want to take the DE4
yes, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment. So Representative Clark moves the DE4 amendment. If you want to explain the amendment, Representative
yes,
Clark.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As some of you know, this bill, when we started out, we had quite a bit of contention about it. We have now come to really agreement on exactly how this should work. The purpose of the amendment is to make the housing opportunities for low-income communities of color, American Indian people, more equitable. We have in Minnesota the worst disparity in terms of home ownership based on race of anywhere in the whole country. And so the efforts in this amendment works with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency in a permissive way to allow them to work with some of their funds to help address that issue. And I can go through it in more detail, but that's basically what the amendment does. It does it in a permissive way, which now has the agreement of everyone. There's no one disagreeing, as I know, with the bill.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative Hulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, so where might this money come from? Is it going to come from cash in a bonding bill to build facilities, or do they take donations, or... I'm a little confused, and sure. If they get no appropriation, and then if funds are available, what are the options for the funding of this?
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg. The agency right now has actually started this pilot project. This gives them a little more guidance. And they use their funds that they have from their mortgage revenue bonds. They are like a bank themselves, able to sell their own bonds, and they have a number of pools, actually three pools that they work with, and I believe it's pool number two that they have used to promote this kind of issue with addressing home ownership disparities. So it's the money that they bring in as an agency, separate from any appropriations or bonding, state bonding.
Representative
Holbert. Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, so it's coming from interest on bonds that they issue? Is that the simple explanation?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I think interest, and also they have revolving funds and a number of ways that they have created these pools from the work that they do.
And
if you want someone to explain that more, there is someone here from the Housing Finance Agency, if that would be.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to take the committee time today, but maybe before it's heard on the floor, I'll try and get a little more information. Thank you.
I can give you a list.
Okay. Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then, Representative Clark, you want to renew your motion?
Renew my motion, Mr. Chairman, that House File 2112, as amended by the DE4 amendment, be recommended, be referred to the floor.
To the General Register.
To the General Register, yeah. Yes.
So Representative Clark renews her motion that House File 2112, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. See no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll revert back. Thank you, Representative Clark. We'll move back to or revert back to Representative Loeffler. Representative Loeffler, your bill deals with the LLC. I'm just trying to LCPFP. There we go. Okay. The chair moves that House File, 1863, be before us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill represents the work of many groups and individuals in reviewing all 162 advisory committees, task force, councils, and work groups in state law. And I have to say, in general, Minnesota is really well served by these groups. They contribute many hours of valued expertise, feedback, assistance, and practical work. But the charge of the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy, which is the LCPF, was to review all of them and determine whether or not they're still performing a useful function, whether or not their major work has been completed and they're just doing a check-in and aren't needed to continue. And many members of the Ways and Means Committee served on that, including Chair Carlson, but I have to give a special shout-out to Representative Mary Liz Holberg, who was on the four-person work group that did the first initial review and cut when we asked every single one of these to fill out a survey on their purpose, their mission, when did they last meet, what recommendations have they provided, what reports have they done. And she, along with Speaker Thiessen, Senator Newman, and Senator Sieben, excuse me, thank you very much, Representative Holberg, did the first cut. And then we, on ones that they wanted more information, we had public hearings on all of these recommendations through the summer, and they have now once again gone through all of the relevant policy committees. This bill was divided into 8 separate bills, went to all the different policy committees, was reassembled in government operations, and has proven to be pretty non-controversial, knock on wood, in terms of most of these groups operate without any budget. They contribute, volunteer their time, but some of them, while they were really relevant and contributing a lot a year or two ago, may not have proven that we thought worthy of continuing in statute.
Okay, and by the way, I should point out the LCPFP, for those in the audience, is the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy. Sometimes we use these in-house acronyms that might not be as clear to people that are listening in or in the audience. Representative Holberg.
And, Mr. Chair, otherwise known when it first started as the Waterboarding of Tom Hansen Committee.
I think I served on that one. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then the chair renews his motion that House File 1863, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
By way of a couple of quick announcements, we've canceled the meeting for tomorrow. That went out earlier this morning with an announcement. So I think maybe everybody will have a bit of relief from what the weather forecast is. Our session is still tomorrow, but Ways and Means Committee will not be meeting until next week, and we'll announce Monday's agenda a little bit later today. So with that, meeting adjourned.